Surreal on the break.
Welcome to Ray and Tay. Today is Wednesday. Yes, sir.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. It's a Wednesday. It's a Major League Baseball preview show here on Ray and Tay. So can you feel it? Are you smelling it? Baseball's in the air. America's pastime. We got to get a new name because the NFL is America's pastime. Baseball is a great sport, and it dominates the summer, but it's not America's sport anymore. But it's still wonderful. You know, we get our baseball
great.
On. Especially you know, growing up playing baseball and Little League and so forth. But, yeah, we've got that. We've got a bunch to talk about today. But before we do, let's tell you who we are. We're Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray, Tal Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. And just with the baseball preview, we also have a special guest, Bob Brenly, former World Series-winning manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, former catcher for the Giants and Padres, and current TV color analyst for Fox Sports Arizona for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And Bob will give us a lot of insight to the season and his thoughts, and we'll even get a little nostalgic with him because, remember, he won arguably one of the most important World Series as a manager in maybe baseball history, people could say, in American history, 2001 after 9/11, the Diamondbacks beat our Yankees. Our hearts are still broken, right?
I went to two of those games.
Still broken, baby.
Games, 3-5 in the Bronx.
Definitely. So anyway, listen, you want to get involved, give us a call, 718-664-9098. Hit us up on our website, rayandtaytoday.com. We've got a lot of things going on there, very interactive. Come visit, check it out, answer some poll questions. Also, send us your emails at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. We love getting your questions on the air. And tweet at us, man. You know, Twitter is really big, and everybody's getting at it. And we always talk to different guys on Twitter, whether it's Jalen Rose or Jay Billis, Dick Vitale, Seth Greenberg. We talk to a lot of guys on Twitter. So tweet at us and get some sports information and, you know, even debate, you know, who's going to win and this and that. So tell them, man. Tell them how we're breaking down the show. We really just jump into it, really.
Yeah, let's do it. What we're going to do real quick is we're going to go through the breaking news and a bunch of sports. There's some things going on in the NCAA world, in the NFL, the NBA, even Major League Baseball real quick. We'll get into a couple of items from last night. Then we'll start our Major League Baseball preview. So Ray and Tay will bring you our thoughts on who's going to finish where. And we'll go through the American League first, and then we'll hit the National League. And right around that time, we should have Bob Brenly joining the show, an ex-catcher himself with the Giants, a manager, like Tay said, of the 2001 Diamondbacks, was a Cubs announcer for a while, and now he's the current D-backs announcer. So back in Arizona, where he won it all in 2001 and beat our Yanks in really a memorable seven-game series. And then finally, we'll give you our predictions. We'll tell you who's going to go to the playoffs, who's going to win the American League, the National League, the Cy Young,
World Series,
and
yeah.
the MVP.
That's
so
right.
Without further ado, let's get into it. Let's get into this breaking news.
Well, listen, Rutgers did the right thing finally, and they fired Mike Rice. The video was released on ESPN. We saw it yesterday on Outside the Lines. Everybody's had it in the 24-hour news cycle, and I think it was appalling, and I think the AD, Peretti, is probably going to go next because he held on to it for too long. He gave him a 3-game suspension and a $50,000 fine, and it's just not enough. I mean, now you've got, you know, different groups getting involved for all the, you know, derogatory, insensitive sexual slurs that he used, and just, you know, he was like, flip-flops are for Fs, and that's ridiculous. And, you know, it's just a shame. And I think as parents, as basketball lovers, people who play the game, no one, and it's not even about now, 2013 or 20, 30 years ago, no one should stand for this. Mike Rice, you know, he said his little speech this morning outside his house. He's appalled by his behavior, this and that. Well, I mean, dude, why would you do it? And for 3 years, this isn't a first offense. And Peretti was like, oh, it's just a first offense. How's a first offense for 3 years, Ray?
Well, you know what it is? It's behavior. And apparently he was really coy about his behavior because what people are saying is that when people came to see him, so whether it was the AD or other people, he would be on his P's and Q's. And his true self and his true, you know, behavior came out when nobody was watching. Luckily, there's cameras. There were cameras installed, and luckily, you know, there was some proof and some evidence of this. And this isn't behavior that you do overnight, right? This is a pattern, and this is something that he's probably done throughout his career. He's a relatively young guy, but he's been doing this, you know, since he's been a coach. I can pretty much guarantee you that. So, yeah, you know, and Rutgers is the State University of New Jersey. I mean, you start to talk about you're a state employee. You know, even the governor was chiming in on that. So there was a little chance that he wasn't going to get fired. I was actually surprised that they didn't fire him on the spot. But, you know, the powers that be stepped in, and there might be a shakeup at Rutgers. But first things first.
Well, I think there has to be as they get ready to go to the Big Ten. What kind of example does that set with the athletic director sort of sweeping this under the rug or kind of acting like it's not a big deal, and you're getting ready to go from the Big East to the Big Ten, and, you know, you're putting your best foot forward getting the Big Ten into the whole New York tri-state area? That's not going to fly, baby. It's not going to fly. So we'll see what happens, you know. It's, you know, the NCAA is a mess. And also, we talk about these players and stuff, but what about these coaches? You know, Brad Stevens, give him credit, he stayed. Shaka Smart stayed. Well, Andy Enfield from Florida Gulf Coast, he's gone. He goes to USC. And it's kind of sad. I think to see the success that they had, and, you know, they're playing ball for 2 years, and then he leaves, puts a bad taste in my mouth, Ray. Bad taste in my mouth.
I can't. The only thing I can say to that is, you know, if people in society are given a chance to take a better job or improve their family life, they're able to do that. The problem I have with the NCAA is that the kids can't do it. So it's one thing for the coach to say, you know what, I have this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, I got to take it. But the kids, when the coach leaves, they can't get out of their commitment. The kids can't transfer. The kids without losing a year. So, you know, and I understand that you don't want total confusion and chaos if there's a change. You know, you can't have kids become free agents in college and just bounce around because you could have a guy go to four different schools in 4 years. But, you know, it seems like if a coach leaves, then maybe the kids should be able to be let out of their commitment or something.
At least.
You know,
without losing a year, at least.
Transfer, yeah. Because you sign up for that coach. I mean, you sign up for the school too, but really you sign up for the coach. And especially when you're 18 years old, somebody comes into your living room and they come recruit you and he says, hey, come join my program. So anyway, that won't change. And good for Andy Enfield for you know, getting what he thinks is a better job. You know, I do feel a little bit for his kids at Florida Gulf Coast, but, you know, we'll see. You know, what might happen is that program might become, you know, that third program or fourth program in Florida, right? You got Miami, Florida, Florida State. Maybe that.
Well, but now they got to find another good coach that people want to come play for. You know what I mean? I think people like, you know, coaches are very special and important for programs in college hoops. And I think he, you know, he obviously was building something and then he leaves. So, I mean, I totally agree with you. You know, you don't want to knock a man's hustle. But I just think on another side of it, it's sad because I think the program had such success this year and the kids are really why it had that success. And then he's gone. So, but, you know, another little basketball stuff and things going around. Your boy Mark Cuban is talking about, oh, he'd consider drafting Brittany Griner, the great 6'8 Baylor female basketball player who would probably be number one in the WNBA draft, which would be out here to visit me, the Phoenix Mercury. So, you know, I'll definitely support Brittany out here. I don't know why Cuban is talking this stuff, and I guess he just wants attention.
Exactly,
but
why you said it, right?
He wants
people to talk about him.
I guess Shark Tank, maybe the ratings for Shark Tank aren't good enough. I don't know.
Possibly.
I don't know. So, but anyway, man, let's talk about, speaking of Arizona, Let's talk about the NFL. The Cardinals, they finally make the trade. You know, it's just a couple of draft choices, and the choices, the drafts can adjust, and it'll be another six-round pick added to them if Carson Palmer plays 13 or starts 13 games. But he's now an Arizona Cardinal, and it looks like Larry Fitzgerald might be kind of happy about it because he's got him an old-fashioned gunslinger. Probably with their pick now, they will draft the third offensive tackle, Lane Johnson, who could be the most talented of them all with his stats that you saw, you know, at the combine. And the Cardinals, you know, with Levi Bryan getting healthy, switch him over to right tackle, and the Cardinals might be back in business. What do you think about that?
Well, it's good.
Mendenhall, too?
Yeah, no, and Mendenhall is on a prove-me year, and
mm-hmm.
Carson Palmer has still yet a lot to prove. He hasn't actually been the same since your Steelers took him out in, what is that, 05 in
yeah.
that playoff game when they blew out his knee.
Two-year deal, $16 million, so.
Yeah, so I guess it helps when you're Arizona, when your best player is also humble and hungry. And Larry Fitzgerald, who we're trying to get on the show, we're working it.
Yeah.
But Fitzgerald says, look, I need to prove myself and get this ship righted. And he said, anybody that wants to help, let's go. So
yeah.
Mendenhall's playing for his contract. Carson Palmer wants to prove that he still has gas left in the tank. So in that respect, the attitude is right. You got a new coach. You got an offensive coach. So hopefully the D plays as you know up to last year's standards, and maybe the offense takes a couple steps in the right direction. So if you're Arizona, you're encouraged. Remember, they started out 4-0, but I kept saying that's not a 4-0 team. So hopefully they'll
yeah.
be competitive. But that I tell you what, though, that West is tough.
Ugh.
That NFC West is tough. Little. Even St. Louis is decent. But
yeah.
when you got to play four games against Seattle and Seattle
and guess
and
who
San
just
Francisco,
got a new cornerback? A third
right?
corner, Nnamdi Asamoah, signs and is taking no guarantee money for the one-year deal with the Niners because he wants to prove himself. And he's back in the Bay Area, which, you know, he went to Cal and played for the Raiders, and he's got a lot of – one thing you can't say about Nnamdi, man, he does so much stuff with high school kids and local charities and stuff. So good that he's back in the Bay Area and stuff. But you're right, man, that AFC West is brutal, Ray. Brutal.
Yeah,
did you see your boy Colt McCoy? Colt McCoy
saw that.
Yeah. So he goes to back up over there, Kaepernick, and is with the Niners. And there's rumors that, remember Pat White from West Virginia? Pat White is looking to back up the third string, you know, to be RG3 and Cousins with the Redskins. So that's kind of interesting. And then Tracy Porter, I thought you'd like this because I know you remember him from the Super Bowl with the pick off for the touchdown, took Manning to the end zone. He signs with the Raiders. So NFL's
he was in Denver
making some moves.
With Manning. But he was hurt for a lot of the
yeah.
season. Then he goes
yeah.
to the Raiders. Okay. So a lot of stuff happening in the NFL. Now, let's bounce to the NBA real quick. Carmelo puts 50 on the Heat, now that he didn't have LeBron or Wade guarding him. But still,
oh.
Shane Battier can play, and they still have some decent players. But he goes 18 for 26. But it's nice to see a Nick put up 50. And then in L.A., what do you think about this whole Shaq retires? Kobe gets a triple-double. They beat Dallas.
Well, I thought it was incredible what the Lakers did. I thought it was interesting how, you know, Kobe gave him props and stuff before the game, but he didn't come out at halftime, and Shaq didn't mention Kobe. Not that big of a deal to me. But I thought the crowd, the way the crowd responded to Phil Jackson was so amazing for the night because they were like, we want Phil, we want Phil. And, you know, Shaq was like, me too. And, you know, you got to feel bad for D'Antoni, but you also got to understand and respect the Laker fans, right? They're not satisfied or happy trying to battle for the eighth spot with the Utah Jazz. They won championships. And when they see Phil in the building, you know, they see Phil Jackson in the building and they see Shaq, his jersey being retired, which was rather early, but that was due to the Buss family and, you know, just their loss of Dr. Jerry Buss. It was an emotional night, you know. I thought it was great. Jerry West was there, and Kobe's 19th triple-double, and they smacked Dallas and basically knocked Dallas, looks like, out of the playoff race, you know, 2.5 back now, and they beat them by 20, you know. And also, you know, a good win by the Knicks. Good win. I don't care that the guys weren't there because they just beat the Spurs the other night with Bosh and them. So good win by the Knicks, good win by the Lakers. And do you think the Lakers will beat out the Jazz? I guess that's the most important question.
Yeah, it looks like Dallas now with this loss, this is a critical loss for Dallas. So it looks like it's a two-team race, and Utah is a tiebreaker. So I tell you what, that's going to be
tough.
The
Lakers have six home games out of the eight left, and then one of the other road games is against the Clippers. So it's like basically a home game.
Right. So in that respect, the schedule favors the Lakers. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Next week, we still won't know next week. I think that it'll come down to the last probably two games, maybe.
Ooh. It's going to be fun, man. And the East is fun, too, right? The Knicks and Pacers are battling back and forth for that second spot. Right now, the Knicks have it. But it seems like every other day or every day, they're tied, they're switching, and the Knicks have the tiebreaker. So we'll see what goes on there. But, man, as we get ready to talk about baseball, do you like what Jay-Z did? Jay-Z hooks up with CAA. I guess they already represent him. But he starts Roc Nation Sports. And Roc Nation Sports just pulled a coup from Scott Boras, who's got to be so sick as Cano's about to sign a 7-year projected $175 million contract. And Jay-Z gets Robinson Cano, second baseman from the Yankees, their star right now and star of the future, to sign on with him. That's big.
That's big time. And like we said off air, I hope this isn't a Master P event where he tries to be an agent and doesn't really do a good job because he's got all these other things he's trying to do. But the fact that he did it with CAA means that it's not like he is an independent agent. So he's just lending his name, and he'll be the funnel, and maybe he makes a commission by
bringing
him.
And the front man. He'll be the front man.
Right. Exactly. And he can't really do it in basketball because of his connection, his minor ownership piece to the Nets. But, it's
exciting.
I
heard football and baseball. Watch out. Jay-Z's coming.
Yeah. So speaking of baseball, last night we had an almost perfect game. And I mean almost. Did you see that? Boy, you. So you, Darvish, from the Texas Rangers, throws 8 2/3. And then on the first pitch, the number ninth hitter,
I know.
Hits
that's
it
the
up
worst.
In the through the wickets, as they say, in hockey, through the five hole, it went between his legs, right up the middle. It's gotta break your heart. 8 2/3, and it turns out that they showed it on SportsCenter that there were four or five other guys that gave up two out, ninth inning hits to break up a no-hitter or a perfect game. I mean, wow. That was crazy. But
well, the Rangers said, hey, they bounced back, right? They lost to the Astros opening night, and then, they bounced back with Yu Darvish. He's probably going to have a great season, and at least he got the W. That's all that matters, too,
It was a classy move, actually, by the Astros to say, look, this guy was basically perfect tonight. It won't go down in history, but he was unhittable tonight. So he had 114 pitches, 14 strikeouts. Mm-hmm. So he was just in total control. I mean, he was just dominant from start to finish.
Yeah, you gotta like that. So I got a little surprise for you before we get to this baseball preview. I just wanna take you somewhere real quick, and here we go.
Out to the ball game. Rest in peace, Harry Carey, and all you Chicago Cubs fans, because they do it right.
Oh, yeah.
But wow, so it's on. It's on. Baseball. Let's talk America's pastime. Major League Baseball. Wow. So the season began on the 31st with one game, right? The Astros and the Rangers. And then the big opening day was Monday, so this is Wednesday. So we're a couple games in, although I don't think any of our picks have changed. The only major injury so far, Ryan Ludwig. So for all you fantasy
yeah.
people out
well,
there.
Well, you know what? Actually, I think Tay might change one pick just for his second wild card team. But, you know, that's nothing major. Let's talk about the American League East. What are you thinking? Let's break down the AL East. Who do you think from top to bottom is what order are they going to finish in?
So I think the AL East is really a race between two teams, and these aren't the teams that historically were dominating this division. So I think the Blue Jays finish first and the Rays finish second. And I think the big boys historically, the Orioles, the Yankees, and the Red Sox finished 3, 4, 5. So I just look at these teams and they have fundamental flaws. I mean, I think the Orioles are good and not great. I think the Yankees are just too old and they don't have any power. And if they don't pitch, if their pitching isn't dominant, I think they are a way below average offensive team. And even if all their talent comes back, it'll be a while before they get back in sync. And even when they come back, who knows, you know, Teixeira starts slow and who knows if you'll get anything from A-Rod this year. And Jeter is, coming off a pretty, pretty bad ankle injury. So I don't like the Yankees. And I think the Red Sox also, I think the Yankees and Red Sox are going to be fighting for 4-5 at the bottom of the division. And I'm a Yankee fan. So it's been once since 1994 that the Yankees haven't won the division or at least gone to the playoffs as the wild card. But I think this is the second year in the last, 19 years that that's going to happen, 20 years.
That's kind of harsh. It's so funny when you say that. It does pain you, especially because, you think of the Jackie Robinson movie coming out, 42, which would be great. But also, this is the last season that anybody will wear the jersey number 42, and it's Mariano Rivera's last season, and he's going to be playing for a Yankee team where he might not even have that many save opportunities. So, I kind of agree with you, but I got it. I have the Rays, the ex-Devil Rays, Tampa Bay at first, and then I've got the Blue Jays getting the wild card in second, and I think the Yankees and Cano and Youkilis and some of the guys will come back. I think they'll have enough to just barely squeak out and get in third. I got the Orioles fourth and the Red Sox fifth. But I am, I wouldn't be surprised if the Red Sox go to third because Jackie Bradley and some of these young kids they have, and if their pitching holds up, the Red Sox got a nice little future with some of their young guys. Watch out for Jackie Bradley Jr. He's a stud. I'm definitely impressed by him. So let's start talking about this AL Central.
Okay, so in the AL Central, I have the Tigers winning and going back deep into the playoffs.
Deep on the cover.
Exactly. My sleeper pick is the Kansas City Royals. So I'll get back to them in a sec. So I got the Royals finishing second. I got the Chicago White Sox third. The Indians, the new Terry Francona led Indians finishing fourth, and the Twins finishing fifth. So I think the Royals are going for it. They've got Francoeur, Kane, and Gordon in the outfield. My man at 2 years in a row in fantasy, Alcides Escobar at short. But for them, it's all about the pitching. It's can James Shields come over and be an ace? Because Shields and Santana and Guthrie, Davis, those guys – I believe are good enough for second place in the AL Central. So I don't know that they'll make the playoffs. I don't think they'll take a wild card, but I do think they'll finish second in that division. So I like Detroit, and most people like Chicago after Detroit, but I'm going for Kansas City Royals.
Well, I'm glad, man, and you know who's happy about that? George Brett, Frank White, all the boys. Amos Otis, they're all they're loving you right now. But I'm like most people. I got the Tigers first. I have nobody winning the wild card, and I've got the Chicago White Sox coming in second. I like the White Sox, and I think that they're solid. But I think you mentioned it, Terry Francona. I think that the Indians and some of the moves that they made, I think the Indians are going to come in third. I got the Royals in fourth and the Twins in fifth. And I feel bad for Mauer, right, because the Twins, they still need a lot of players. I think that that's they're in a rough spot right now, the Twins, you know. So now let's go out west.
Going over to the West. Now this division is finally evened out, the AL West, because it used to historically have four teams, but now that MLB traded the Astros to the AL West and moved them from the NL Central, I like, you know, here most people have a battle between the Angels, the Rangers, and the A's, and then the bottom two, the Mariners and the Astros, are just, you know, just fighting for that fourth and fifth spot. So I think Astros are going to be terrible. Unfortunately, they just, you know, they lost 100 games last few years. They'll probably be close to that. Maybe they'll lose 90 this year. But I like the Angels to win that division. I like the Rangers to come in second. I like the A's to fight hard but come in third. And then Mariners and Astros.
Okay, that's definitely interesting. I don't think we're too different, but, you know, we definitely have a difference with the playoffs here. I got the Angels winning it. I think they're going to win this division. I love that lineup. I think the pitching will hold up. But to me, when you've got Pujols and Trout and Trumbo and
Hamilton,
I can't even imagine facing that lineup every night. But I also like the Oakland A's. I like the pitching. I like, you know, Jared Parker. I like their lineup. They're scrappy. They get their runs. I think, you know, the confidence that they gained last year, that they were able to make, you know, that run and towards the, you know, the last month to make the playoffs, I think it carries the A's, and I think this year they get the wild card. The Rangers are going to drop down a little bit. I like you, Darwish, but I don't know about the rest of the pitching staff. We'll see how they do and if they can hold up. But I think the Rangers will just miss the playoffs and come in third. I got the Mariners fourth. I think they're definitely, you know, going to be an improved team, though. I like, you know, they led the spring training in home runs. I like their team. You know, they got Ibanez, their offense, their pitching, the King Felix.
They locked down King Felix. Yeah, Kyle Seager.
Yeah, he's the man. King Felix is the man.
They got some young talent there.
They do. You know, and good for them, right? Remember when they used to have the best young talent in baseball, back when they had Griffey and A-Rod and, you know, the whole plethora of guys. And
Dave Buell.
Oh, yeah. Man, the Mariners used to be awesome, right? And then I got the Astros fifth. I think the Astros are just above a minor league team. I'm sorry, you know. And,
don't
you know, I know
like
they're rebuilding.
They're a professional team. And give a couple of slack. They're actually moving from the NL Central to the AL West. So, well, look, I have them coming in fifth, too. But let's see.
No, I know. I just think it's going to be rough. And, you know. It makes me think about the old guys, man, right? Remember Jose Cruz and the batting stance and just the guys. I got to ask that to Bob Brenly, man. I think about batting stances.
We've got him on the line. Hold on. Let me patch him in.
All right.
Hello. Welcome to Ray and Tay today. This is Ray, Tal Rayside, and we got Tay, Eric Taylor on the line, too.
How you guys doing today?
Hi, how are you, Bob?
I'm doing well. Just getting ready to head down to Chase Field for the final game of the series between the D-backs and the St. Louis Cardinals tonight, and really glad that baseball season is finally underway.
Yeah, it's been a while.
You gotta
right?
be happy. Gotta be happy. So, you know, Bob, it's funny that last night I'm watching the game and I was just wondering, after watching the first game and the dominance of Kennedy and just the 15 hits and the way they played last night with the D-backs, I was like, ooh, I don't know. Maybe they will make the wild card. But then after watching the first game, I was like, oh, man, the D-backs are awesome. They're making the playoffs. What's going on over there, man?
Well, they're a team that's built around pitching and defense. And, you know, with the trade of Justin Upton, this offseason, and also the trade of Chris Young last year, they're trying to go in a different direction offensively. You know, you mentioned that first game of the season against the Cardinals, and that is absolutely the blueprint that Kirk Gibson and the Diamondbacks are going to try to follow. Get a strong starting performance and then turn the ball over to that very deep bullpen and just find ways to scratch and scrape and score a run or two here and there. They've added Martin Prado, a real good on-base percentage guy. He sees a lot of pitches. They're just trying to reformulate their offense with the idea of getting the starting pitcher out of the game early, keeping the pressure on the pitcher and the defense, and just pitch it and catch it and hope you can find a way to score one more run than the opposition. It worked really good opening night. It didn't work so good last night.
It definitely did. But, you know, Bob, before we get into just present day and even some picks, I just want to take you back real quick. And for our listeners, I mean, everyone knows about, you know, your history in terms of the broadcasting, and, you know, they might not know all of it, but, and obviously the managing. But as a player, just give our listeners a little taste of what it was like coming up, breaking into the big leagues, getting your first hit and your first home run.
Oh, man, very exciting, Eric. I got to tell you, you know, there's a lot of different ways to get to the big leagues. You know, there's guys that are number one draft picks that are can't-miss prospects. You can look at them on a field and, you know, pretty well tell this guy's going to play in the big leagues. And then there's other guys like me that kind of slipped through the cracks. I was an undrafted free agent after 4 years of college at Ohio University, and played 6 seasons in the minor leagues. I was a 28-year-old rookie by the time I got to the major leagues. And, you know, every day I spent in the big leagues, as far as I was concerned, was gravy. I mean, I didn't think I was ever going to get a chance to play professional ball. And once I got into professional ball, I didn't think I was ever going to get out of the minor leagues. But, you know, I just kept my head down and kept my nose clean and kept grinding away. And eventually I warmed down and they had to give me a shot, and I tried to take full advantage of it. But my first hit in the big leagues was I grew up in Ohio, and my first game and first hit in the big leagues came at Cincinnati's old Riverfront Stadium off a right-hander named Scott Brown. Soft line drive into center field. I had about 30 family members at the ball game that night, and boy, what a thrill. I can tell you, it doesn't matter where it comes, but the fact that I was able to do it at home, so to speak, in front of my friends and family really made it extra special.
You still have that ball? Did they save that ball for you?
Oh, absolutely. They saved that ball, and I also got the first ball that I got a hit in the American League as well. And I only had one American League home run playing for the Toronto Blue Jays in 1989. I've got that ball as well. My first home run in the big leagues came against a left-handed reliever for the Pittsburgh Pirates named Rod Scurry. Boy, one of the best lefties in the National League at the time. He went on to have a lot of personal problems and some issues later on in his life, but at that time he was just filthy, had a nasty, nasty curveball, and I just happened to catch one of them just right at Candlestick Park one night, and my first home run was right down the left field line over the foul pole.
Wow. There you go. See? That's pretty awesome. So when you talk about that and that type of experience, and, you know, for guys like us, you know, we played, you know, growing up, it gives me chills, and I can only imagine then to go to the next step and then be a manager. So tell us about, you know, I mean, I know it was a quick stint with the Diamondbacks, and I'm sure a lot of people here in Arizona would love to have you back managing Bob as well, but your first year, you take out our Yankees and you win the World Series. I mean, give us a little insight to probably the most important, you know, for our country in terms of what happened with 9/11, definitely emotionally, winning that World Series. What are your thoughts on that whole experience?
Well, as you know, Eric, I came down from the booth. I was actually the color analyst for the Diamondbacks at the time, along with Tom Brenneman, and Buck Showalter was running the Diamondbacks at that point, and boy, he had done an absolutely amazing job. He came in back in 1997 before there was even a Diamondbacks team, and he started to put everything together. He helped design the uniforms. He helped design the spring training facility. I mean, as far as the letterhead on the stationery, I mean, he did everything to build that organization from the inside out. You know, unfortunately for him, he just couldn't let go. He couldn't let go of everything and just focus on managing the ball club, and he kind of lost the team a little bit in 2000. I think they had a good enough team to win in 2000, but
right.
Curt Schilling came down with an injury toward the end of the season, and obviously you lose a guy like Curt Schilling, that's going to hurt your chances. So the Diamondbacks decided to go in a different direction after the 2000 season, and Jerry Colangelo was our managing general partner at the time, asked me if I would be interested in coming out of the booth and going down the field to manage that team, and I couldn't say yes fast enough because I really loved that ball club. It was a veteran team. Obviously, the two big boys at the top of the rotation with Johnson and Schilling.
Awesome.
You know, we had veterans at every position, guys that really knew how to play the game. They'd all accomplished tremendous individual honors in the game. We had batting champions. We had home run champions. We had Cy Young winners. We had Gold Glove winners. But only Craig Counsell on that team had won a World Series ring with the Florida Marlins back in 93. So I can't imagine a better situation for a first-year manager than to have hungry veteran players, and that's exactly what we had that season. And I it wasn't easy. I won't say it was easy, but boy, that kind of team is fun to manage.
Yeah, those three games in the Bronx must have been heart-wrenching. You go in and VK Kim, you know, had a rough three games there in the middle. I mean, I went to two out of those three games, and of course, I'm pulling for the Yankees, and I didn't think that the Yankees were going to win those middle games. But it's always, you know, interesting to have a series where you've got the home team winning every game. So the emotional swings.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned, you know, coming so soon after 9/11. I've said it for years. That World Series worked out for me exactly the way it had to. The home team won every game, and certainly the people of New York and the Yankees organization and everybody involved needed a distraction. They needed something to take their minds off of what was going on there. And I've said it many times, I had never been prouder to be involved in professional baseball than I was that year. That we really feel like we provided a service, not only to baseball fans, but people all over the country, just to take their minds off of the horrific things that happened on 9/11, and even if it was just for 2 or 3 hours a night, to be able to do something and watch something that could take your mind off of those horrible things. And like I said, I had never been prouder to be a part of Major League Baseball, and I think that series worked out exactly the way it had to. The Yankees got to walk off the field triumphantly after those middle three games, and like I said, for me, I like the way it ended.
Well, it meant a lot as a New Yorker and as, you know, somebody who was in New York, you know, at the time. It really did mean a lot, that whole picking up sports after, I forgot how many days there was a break after 9/11, but then picking it up and then having the Yankees go deep in the playoffs did a lot for the, you know, psyche and rallying. Yeah.
And that Piazza home run. Remember that Piazza home run? That's what brought it all back.
Yeah, well, you resumed the season after 9/11. Yeah, everybody had, I can't remember exactly how many days of downtime before we resumed the season. And, once again, for us in the game, you know, we take our jobs very seriously. But, that season put everything into perspective. And, once again, just we were all glad just to provide a distraction at that point.
So, Bob, let me ask you something. So, as a player in the 80s and then a manager, you know, in the 2000s, you've seen, you know, the baseball evolve. And let me ask you about one thing that we kind of have touched upon a couple times here on the show is, you know, you've seen the steroid era, and you hopefully we're seeing the post-steroid era. So what are your thoughts about that? What are your thoughts about, you know, the Hall of Fame, the fact that all of these guys who may or may not have used steroids, at least by age and by tenure, are coming up for Hall of Fame selection, right? It's five years after they've retired. So now you've got a whole slew of Hall of Fame caliber players based on their stats coming up for Hall of Fame induction. So what do you think about that? Is there anything you think baseball should do, and what's your perspective?
Well, first of all, it is very upsetting for those of us in the game, for guys like Craig Biggio. I mean, I have no doubts that Craig Biggio was a clean ball player. By his own admission and by everybody who knows him a lot better than I do, Frank Thomas was a clean ball player. But because they played in the era they did, and because they were some of the better players in the game, there's always going to be that cloud of suspicion. I feel very sorry for those players. It's a shame that the Players Association, that the union didn't step up sooner. Their job is to look out for the best interest of all the players in the major leagues, not just protect a few cheaters. And unfortunately, I think the union lost sight of what their real job was throughout the so-called steroid era. And, it could potentially cost some guys an opportunity to go to the Hall of Fame. And I think that's just a sin. Now, as far as the Hall of Fame goes, I mean, you know, there's a lot of guys in the Hall of Fame that were bad, bad people. There were a lot of guys in the Hall of Fame that you wouldn't introduce your daughter to them. I know that. You know, baseball changed over the years. We had the dead ball era. They raised the mound. They lowered the mound. The ballparks used to be a lot bigger. The ground rules used to be differently. If a ball bounced out of the ballpark, it used to be counted as a home run. So there have been so many changes in the game of baseball in its great history. I think you have to induct the guys. As hard as it is for me to say, I think a guy like Barry Bonds, certainly he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame based on his statistics. And I think baseball fans are discerning enough and smart enough and know enough about what has happened in the last 20 years of this game. You know, to go to Cooperstown and walk in there and look at the exhibits, yeah, Barry Bonds, great player, Pittsburgh Pirates, San Francisco Giants, possibly a cheater, probably a cheater. You know, fans can figure things out. They're not stupid. And, you know, based on what they did on the field, sure they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. But I don't know if this will ever be solved. There's just so many differing opinions and very, very emotional opinions on both sides of that argument that I don't know how they're ever going to solve it. The people who vote for the Hall of Fame don't know what to do. They don't know whether to induct these guys or to ban them forever. So, you know, I'm not smart enough to figure out what to do with these guys. But for me, I think baseball fans are smart enough to make their own judgment. And, you know, if Barry Bonds' plaque is hanging in Cooperstown and a dad is reading it to his son, I'm sure that he would say, you know, one of the greatest players ever. But we're pretty sure that that he was taking illegal steroids during his playing career, and that could have possibly inflated his numbers at the end.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, like you said, to me, the worst part is that the whole baby with the bathwater thing, because
you can only
be suspicious of people at this stage. There are very few people that you have hard evidence that they used it. So are we not going to let people in because of suspicion? That's too hard. And you bring up a good point. You know, fans are smarter than we you know, maybe than we give them credit for. Let them decide, you know, if it's a virtual asterisk or if it's a literal asterisk, let them decide. So I like that approach.
Well, Bob, would you be willing, like someone like yourself who's been in all, you know, sort of aspects and a lifetime, you know, baseball guy, if they got a committee of not just these writers, former players, broadcasters, former managers to maybe, you know, be involved in the selection process or maybe even the weeding out process? I think fans would feel more comfortable if you sort of had a baseball hierarchy, you know, really, you know, deciphering through this. What do you think about something like that? And would you be willing to be a part of something like that?
Well, absolutely. I would be willing to be part of something like that. But the issue you're going to run into there is even within the game of baseball, there's not a consensus on what we should do about this. I mean, I know a lot of players that played with teammates that they knew were juicing. There was no doubt. I know a lot of guys who were juicing in the game of baseball. And you talk to managers, you talk to coaches, you talk to current-day players, and there's a huge split and a huge divide. A lot of guys feel like, hey, you know, it was part of the era. I mean, you know, you go back to the 60s and 70s, and everybody was taking greenies and amphetamines, and then you had the steroid era, and you know, I'm not naive enough to believe that the steroid era is over. I think that the chemists and the doctors have figured out ways to get around the testing of more short-acting forms of performance-enhancing drugs. And, you know, we've seen it in the Olympics. It just seems like the chemists always stay a step ahead of the testers. And I'm pretty sure that there are still guys using some form of performance-enhancing drugs right now, but like you said, until you have undisputed truth and facts and evidence that they've done it, it's all speculation, and obviously that's no good. So there's a huge divide even among people that are involved in the game now and were involved in the game back during the so-called steroid era. So I don't know how much good that would do, even if you put a group of, 100 or 200 former or current players and coaches and managers. I think it's probably still going to be split right down the middle.
Wow.
Yeah, you're probably right. So, Bob, let me ask you about the state of baseball. Let me ask you about the state of baseball because, you know, we're old enough, Tay and I, or Eric and I, are old enough to kind of see baseball when we started as kind of the national pastime, and it seems like the NFL has really taken over here and become kind of the sport, the dominant U.S. sport. And, you know, maybe it's the nature of playing once a week and kind of the climax. But baseball definitely has its, you know, place starting now and going through the summer. But what do you think about the state of baseball? You know, you go around the country and you're at these stadiums and the fans and the teams. And what's your thinking about the state of baseball right now?
Well, first of all, I think if baseball played one game a week on Sundays, it would be every bit as popular as the NFL, if not more so. But because of the nature of our season, you know, it's you know, you've heard all the flowery poems about you know, baseball is life, and you're born in the spring, and then you blossom in the summer, and then you die in the fall. And I don't know if I'd go that far, but you know, it is a long grind. And you know, the first couple games of the season, everybody has a knee-jerk reaction to their hometown team. Oh my God, we're going to be horrible. Oh my God, we're going to win a World Series. And nobody knows what's going to happen over the course of 6 months. And for me, that's the allure of baseball. It's not a one time a week, let's go out and show them the best we have and then do it again next week. You have to show up every day. And not only does it test your ability and your players at the big league level, you're going to have to test the depth of your system. You're going to have to bring up players from the minor leagues. You know, your scouts are going to have to find those players. Your development guys are going to have to get them in the minor leagues and teach them how you want them to play the game. It all kind of comes together for me, but the fact that it takes 6 months to get to the point where we weed them out, where we get to the point where these are the best teams that we have this season, and now we're going to start our postseason. But to me, that's the great part of the game of baseball, just seeing how teams ride the ebbs and flows of the season and withstand injuries or don't withstand injuries. That to me is a real true test of who the good teams are and ultimately who the best team is.
Yeah, 162 games in 180 days. That's a tall order, right?
It's a testament, and it's also discipline. But one thing, Bob, I've spoken to you about this off air, and I just have that special feeling for Pete Rose. I can remember it being one of the first books and sports books that I ever read about, and I just loved him as a player, Charlie Hustle. But when I think about the Hall of Fame, and, you know, I would love to have him in it if there's really going to be, you know, bringing in whoever you want to bring in. But on the fun side of the game, do you ever talk about, like, you know, when you were growing up, like, what guys you idolized or who was your favorite baseball stance? You know, I was talking to Ray about this before you came on. You know, I think about, like, Doug DeSensei or Daryl Porter, or I used to love Rod Carew's batting stance. Like, for you, like, what were the guys that you liked, and also do you think about stuff like fantasy sports, like fantasy baseball and stuff? I'm kind of curious because, you know, I think fans don't know what someone like a baseball insider like yourself on the different levels, how you view baseball and sports. So maybe you can just give us a little insight with those things.
Well, first of all, Eric, I was born and raised in Ohio, so I grew up a Cleveland Indians fan back in the mid-60s when they were horrible. but they were my guys, you know. The Vic Davalio and Woody Held and Max Alvis and, you know, Rocky Colavito and Joe Askew and John Romano. I knew their batting averages. Of course I knew their stances. Are you kidding me? We'd play wiffle ball in the backyard and, you know, you'd go down the lineup and whichever guy was, it was his turn to hit, you had to imitate him. You had to hit right-handed or left-handed depending on who the player was and imitate the windups of the pitchers and just lived and died with those Cleveland Indians of the mid-60s. And I'll tell you a very quick story. Vic Davalio was a young player for the Cleveland Indians. I believe it was 1965. And, you know, flashy young guy at the time, could run like the wind, tremendous defender. Later in my career as a player, I actually got to play with Vic Davalio down in winter ball one year. And I can't tell you what a thrill that was for me. You know, it just seemed like yesterday I was in the backyard imitating his batting stance, and now here I am playing with him on a winter ball team. And I had to scratch my head a few times about that one. But just great, great memories of growing up and watching those guys. And once again, I think that's one of the allures of baseball. Every kid who grew up, whether it's the Dodgers or the Mariners or the Yankees or the Diamondbacks, that's your team, and that will always be your team. And I run into people all the time, and I'll ask them, where are you from? Well, I'm from Atlanta. Well, who was your favorite player? And their eyes light up, and they talk, you know, similar story that I just told about playing in the backyard or out at the sandlot and whatever it is, it's a common thread that all baseball fans have.
Definitely, definitely. Well, I know Steve last night on the show was kind of teasing you a little bit, Bob, about the fans and everybody wanting you to get on Twitter and the social media stuff. So are you just the anti-Twitter guy, or is it just, you know, are you kind of like you and Barkley, the only dinosaurs that are like, hey, I'm not messing with that Twitter stuff?
Well, I say it all the time. I'm more face-to-face than Facebook, you know.
I got
nothing against people that enjoy Twitter and get on the Facebook and, you know, do all that stuff. But, you know, I don't think my life is that interesting that I got to tell everybody what I'm eating for lunch and what time I'm leaving for the ballpark. You know, I'll get there when I get there. And when I get there, I'll see you and I'll talk to you face to face. How's that?
I like it.
Hey, Bob,
we're old school guys, Bob, too, man. And we're only on Twitter because we feel like we got to compete, you know?
Yep.
That's
true.
The
nature
of the beast.
Too much. But if we could get some predictions out of you, we're going to give ours after, you know, at the end of the show. But what do you think in terms of, you know, who do you think is going to win the AL, the NL, and then maybe even an MVP or a Cy Young? Are you in the business of giving out a few predictions?
Well, you know, I these are all personal predictions based on nothing more than my own personal feelings. I mentioned I played a brief period of time in Toronto in 1989. I still have a lot of friends up there in the Blue Jays organization, and, boy, I like a lot of the moves they made in this offseason. I think they are definitely a team to be reckoned with.
They're loaded.
You know, obviously the Rays are very good in that AL East. The Yankees, I think, unfortunately for you guys, are going to have a tough year this year. They've suffered some real debilitating injuries, and, you know, with the payroll they have in the past, they've been able to go out and just sign another all-star. You lose an all-star, you go out and sign another all-star, but I don't think they're in that position right now to retool the way they have in the past. So for me, the Blue Jays and the Rays are the cream of the crop, and I like the Blue Jays just a little bit better.
Okay. What do you think about the Angels? Do you think the Angels or Tigers can push through, and, you know, overall in the AL, or do you think the Blue Jays could do it?
Well, I think the Blue Jays could win the American League. Obviously, the Tigers are loaded. I mean, they are loaded and ready to go, but it just seems like there's something missing with that team. I can't really put my finger on it. I know they had some key injuries last year, too, but it just seems like something is missing for me with that Tigers ball club. And you mentioned the Angels, and obviously they are loaded for bear this year too, but I think maybe the expectations could catch up with them because, as we all know, just because your team looks good on paper doesn't mean that necessarily translated into winning your division. But, you know, I'm kind of partial to the A's in that American League West because my former bench coach, Bob Melvin, who has gone on to have a great managerial career of his own, taking the Diamondbacks to the playoffs a few years ago and took a very undermanned A's team into the postseason last year. I'm a big fan of Mel's, and I know he's going to get the best out of whatever he has on that roster. In that West, I think the Angels are the team to watch fall this year. I just think losing Hamilton and in my eyes, they haven't done enough to replace the numbers that he was able to provide. I think their pitching is very thin, and I think after coming close as they have for the last couple of years, I think they're due for a fall. So I think that Western Division, the Angels and the A's are the cream of the crop, and I got to pull for the A's just because my boy Bob Melvin's there.
Oh, about the National League?
But for me, the Eastern Division, you got to go through Washington, D.C. Boy, that is a really good ball club. I mean, I know those people in that organization feel like they got shortchanged last year because they bumped up against the Cardinals team that got red hot at exactly the right time. But, man, those Nationals, they are loaded offensively, defensively, pitching, bullpen. They've got all the pieces in place, and you know, the rest of the division for me is just a little thin this year. The Braves could be an improved team, you know, adding the other Upton brother to their lineup. That's certainly going to help them, but I'm just not sure that their pitching is good enough to carry them to a division title. A wild card is a possibility for the Braves, but the rest of that division, the Phillies, the Mets, the Marlins, I don't know if you could get one good team out of all three rosters.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
well, how do you like Cincinnati? I think Cincinnati's got to be the class of the Central. Do you like Johnny Cueto and the boys?
Yeah, the Reds are pretty strong. And, you know, Joey Votto, for me, is a real MVP candidate in the National League. You mentioned Pete Rose earlier. And here in Arizona, we played the Cincinnati Reds two exhibition games right at the end of spring training. And had a chance to sit down with Marty Brenneman, their long time Hall of Fame announcer. And Marty Brenneman, saw Pete Rose in his heyday, and he told me that Joey Votto is the only player he's ever seen that has a similar work ethic to Pete Rose. That's pretty high praise. I mean, Joey Votto, I don't know if you read ESPN, the magazine, tremendous article in there last week about Joey Votto and his approach to hitting and what a great student of hitting and a great student of the game he is. And, boy, for me, he's one of the best hitters in the game, and I think he's really motivated this year. He had a subpar season for him last year because of the knee injury, and I think he's a guy to keep your eye on.
He's my pick for NL MVP.
Well, that's not a bad one. Yeah, he's pretty strong.
And then the West, your West.
Well, the West, the Giants are the defending champions, so you certainly can't overlook them. They pretty much stood pat. They didn't really add much. They didn't subtract much in the offseason. They're all about pitching. You know, they're playing that big old ballpark up there in San Francisco, and if you can pitch it and catch it, and just like I talked about the Diamondbacks, they figure they'll find a way to score a run. You can't discount the Giants, but, boy, if the Dodgers don't get to the postseason this year, I think some heads are going to roll down there in Chavez Ravine, because if they don't have the highest payroll in baseball, they're probably a close second, and just an all-star at every position, and this is a team that's built to win a World Series, and anything short of that, I think some heads are going to roll. The Diamondbacks, for me, are a team that's very interesting. They got good pitching. They've got a great deep bullpen. They play solid defense. They don't have a superstar caliber player on the roster, but they have a lot of guys who are very talented, had nice careers, put up good numbers. They all seem to run well. They all seem to know how to play the game. They throw to the right base. Their fundamentals are very sound. And Kirk Gibson, surprisingly to me, has really evolved into a good manager. I didn't know Gibby was going to be that kind of a manager, because he was such a fiery player. I thought maybe there would be constant controversy and bumping heads with his players and his coaching staff. But he has really settled in, and for my money, I think he's one of the better managers in the National League right now. So yeah, I don't know if I can pick a clear favorite. Since I work for the Diamondbacks and they signed my checks, obviously I'm pulling for them. But I think of all the divisions in baseball, that National League West has a chance to be a really good race right down to the wire.
So, Bob, real quick, though, with Cody Ross and Eaton, and obviously the young kid Pollock looked great last night, are Ross and Eaton due to come back rather soon, or are the injuries, are they out for a while? What's the status with those guys?
Well, Cody Ross,
they'll make a big difference.
To the best of my knowledge, Cody Ross is very near going out to extended spring to get some at-bats and to get back into baseball shape. He had a calf injury, and it wasn't super serious, but they just didn't want to take any chances this early in the season. They want to make sure he's 100% before they bring him back. So Cody Ross is not far away. I would say within the next couple of weeks he should be back on the active roster. Adam Eaton, on the other hand, it may be middle of May, end of May before he's back in the lineup, and that was a huge loss for the Diamondbacks. Everybody with the organization has kind of tried to downplay it, that we can cover that loss. And you mentioned A.J. Pollock has had a nice start to the season filling in. But Adam Eaton is, I compare him to Lenny Dykstra. He's one of those guys that he's a high-energy player. He's always on base. He's making things happen. He can steal a base. He's a great defender in center field. He's one of those guys, if he's on your team, you love him and you root for him. And if he's on the opposing team, you absolutely hate him, because it seems like he's always in the middle of something. And when they get him back, everybody will settle back into a better spot in the lineup for them to hit. It all works off that number one guy in the lineup for the D-backs. And the sooner they can get Adam Eaton back, the sooner they're going to start firing on all cylinders.
Wow. Well, Bob, I know you got to run to the stadium. I will hold you to Blue Jays and Diamondbacks in the World Series. How does that sound for you?
Well, I'll take that. Yeah, that'd be good. I love the city of Toronto, and obviously I'm rooting like heck for the D-backs. But it's baseball, and no matter who gets there, I'm going to be tuned in, and I'm going to be rooting for one team or the other. You just can't get it out of your blood, as you guys well know.
Definitely.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob. It was a pleasure.
Definitely.
Pleasure
thanks.
Was mine,
Bob, we'll have to have you back around the playoffs so we can really, chew it up and see who we think will make it to the series from that point.
That sounds good, Eric. I'll see you out in the front yard soon.
All right. Take care. Thanks,
all right,
Bob.
Take care. Keep up the great work.
Oh, man. Great, great, great spot. I mean, right there, you have a baseball legend, Bob Brenly, joining us for our baseball preview. And, you know, he makes so many great points. But, you know, as we're continuing the preview, when you talk about the National League, and, you know, I love to hear that about Votto, you know. And, you know, you can only get that type of information from somebody like a Bob Brenly. But, you know, he's your NL pick. I didn't pick him because I didn't want to pick the same thing you picked. You know, I like McCutchen with the Pirates, and I also like Kemp, but I love Joey Votto. You know, I'm a, you know, sort of in the closet Cincinnati Reds fan, so you know I love Joey Votto, and I actually have the Reds going to the World Series. So, but let's continue. We left off with the American League. You want to jump right into the NL East?
Yeah, and look, we both have the same NL East, so let's just tell everybody that we both have the Nationals. I mean, that team, like Bob said, like Bob Brenly said, that team is loaded. And you add back a, you know, it's top of the rotation, Strasburg, to, you know, the other guys in the rotation with Gio Gonzalez and Detweiler and so forth. And they've got middle relief, they've got end of the bullpen, they've got offense, they've got youth, they've got everything. You know, that team could win 100 games. So we both have them winning. We both have the Braves in second. We both have the Phillies, the Mets, and the Marlins rounding out the NL East. But like Bob said, you put all three of those teams together and you really don't have a dominant team in the NL.
But, hey, listen, for our Met fans that listen, I think they're going to be up and coming. And, listen, if things break right, like Bob said, it's a long season – they could wind up ahead of the Phillies. Look, if the Phillies look old, like they're, you know, they could look, and their pitching doesn't work out, the Mets have got some young studs. Now, I would have liked to have them keep R.A. Dickey, but hey. You know, and then, like I said, I'm not sticking with my Phillies pick of the wild card. I thought better about it. Hey, I'm out here. I'm going to root for the Diamondbacks. So my second wild card, I have the Braves, and my second wild card will be the Diamondbacks. So the Central we have pretty similar as well. But I've got the Reds, then the Brewers, going with the Cardinals. I just think the Brewers are going to be improved, and, you know, Braun could just, you know, not get caught with any steroids or whatever. I think the Brewers, their pitching and their lineup, they'll come through. I think the Cardinals, man, I got them in third, but the Cardinals are such a clutch team with Freeze when he gets back healthy and Craig and those guys. Who knows?
Well, yeah,
they
locked down Wainwright. They've got, look, the Cardinals are one of those teams where, you know, you can win 83 games and win the World Series.
Yeah,
and then you could, yeah, you, they're a tough team to count out. So even,
definitely. And then after the Cardinals, I got Pirates and Cubs.
Yeah.
So yours is a little bit different. You end with Pirates and Cubs like me, but what do you have?
Yeah,
Reds, Cardinals, Brewers, right?
Brewers swapped, right? We both have the Reds. You have the Reds, Brewers, Cardinals, and I have the Reds, Cardinals, Brewers. And then we both have Pirates and Cubs. So finally, the NL Central is down to five teams. It used to be six teams forever, but the Astros got punted to the AL West.
So
and
NL
let's
West.
Finish it up. Yep.
Yeah, we both got the Dodgers winning that. You have the Diamondbacks a wild card, and I now the same. I have the Diamondbacks. I'm a believer. I got to go with you and Bob, man. You guys convinced me, and I think Ross and Eaton coming back, it won't be so long for Eaton, like he said. And I like the pitching, you know, although Trevor, you know, Cahill kind of struggled last night, but he's lost weight, and I think Kennedy is ready for a breakout year. I've got the Giants at third, so do you. And then we both finish out with the Padres and the poor Rockies, you know?
Yeah, the Diamondbacks, you know, the thing with the Diamondbacks is I really like them. The problem is Trevor Cahill, Miley, McCarthy. So after Kennedy, who you could argue is okay, he's the number one starter, they're 2-3-4, and then they're outfield. You know, Kubel, Pollock, and Parra, until they get Adam Eaton back, they really have to step it up a little bit. And
it's all scrappiness.
It's going to be tough out there.
Yeah.
You know,
but you're right,
Dodgers,
about Cahill. He's got to be a solid number two. And we'll see tonight. McCarthy, this is a big game for him. He's going to have to sort of be a really strong number three, I think, for them. So let's look at what we have in the playoffs. So in the ALCS, you got who?
So my ALCS is I got the Tigers beating the Angels.
Okay. And I got the Angels beating the Rays.
Okay.
And then the NL,
I got the Nationals beating the Reds. I just think that team was so close last year.
Yeah.
And now that they got Strasburg back on unlimited pitch count and unlimited innings count, they're a little too much for the Reds.
Hey, it's hard to go against you, but I just, you know, like Bob said, I just feel something. For me, I got the Reds, but I just think over, not the Nats, but over the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers will get it together. Hanley Ramirez will come back. They'll get healthy. But I think for some reason, this Red team, this is their year. I don't think they like how they went out in the playoffs last year, and I think the Reds go over the Dodgers. And then our World Series.
I like the Tigers. I think they were there last year. And I agree with Bob about they're missing something, but I think that was last year. I think they tasted it. They tasted the World Series. They got swept. They probably think that they were a better team. And I think they come back with a chip on their shoulder. They have arguably the best pitcher in the game and arguably the best hitter in the game, certainly the first Triple Crown winner since Yastrzemski did it in 67. So I like the Tigers.
And for me, I'm going with those Angels, man, the City of Angels. I just think that the pitching will hold up enough. And I really think that those bats, I think, you know, always good pitching beats good hitting. But I think this is good hitting that is just too good hitting. I think Trumbo is underestimated. I think Trout will continue to improve. I mean, you know, you got the shortstop. You got, what's it, Akbar or...
Ibar.
The lineup is so deep. And, you know, when you look at a Pujols and a Hamilton, I think Pujols is second year in the American League. They better watch out. I mean, and, you know, I know you agree because you got Pujols as your AL MVP, and I got Trout. So we're going with the teammates for the MVP.
That's going to be like a pinball machine, though, the Angel offense. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. And then who's your AL Cy Young?
I think we both have the same Cy Young. Justin Verlander, I think he's the best
man.
Pitcher. Yeah, best pitcher maybe in the game. Just got his money. You know, maybe he rests on his laurels a little bit. But I think he stays hungry. He hasn't won anything yet. He hasn't won that
mind
World
on
Series.
My money and my money on my mind. Nah, you're right.
Right.
And then NL, you got the Votto guy. That's a great story to hear that he's got to push and drive like Pete Rose. You know, look, I could go with Votto, too. I just want to be different with you, just like how you went with Florida when I took Michigan. So I'm going to go with Matt Kemp. I think maybe, you know, he stays healthy enough, and Kemp is a star. And this is the year where his star explodes. And then our Cy Youngs. Huh?
I said, is he a 50-50 guy?
I know, right? Like the yeah, I love those commercials for the show. He's like, you hit 64 and 64 stolen bases. He's like, yeah, it was in the video game. So the NL Cy Young.
I got the lefty, Clayton Kershaw.
You love your lefties, man. You love your lefties. Well, listen, you know me. I got to go with Johnny Cueto. I love that name, too. Johnny Cueto, man. It's great. Look, a great show. You know, our picks could fall flat on our face, but we throw them up, you know. Maybe we'll throw it up on rayandtaytoday.com so you can check it out and see how our picks look and compare with us. It was a great show. We had a great legend. I mean, think about it. Like he said, he broke into the majors, Bob Brenly, at 28. And you know what? Thing you don't know, and I know just from meeting and talking to Bob, he was actually in the broadcasting when he was younger from college and going on. So who knew, right? I mean, he makes the pros. He plays 9 years. Should ask him about that 84 year, his best season, batting 291 and having a great season. But he winds up, you know, managing and, you know, from broadcasting to managing back to broadcasting. So he's back home where he loves
baseball
it. And
guy, yeah.
And him and Steve are great. I got to say that, you know, they're just coming together to do their first year with the Diamondbacks. But it's a privilege for me as a New Yorker. You know, I'm going to be really critical watching broadcasters because, you know, what we have in New York is great for the local teams. But, you know, Steve Bershom and Bob Brenly are really, really a solid team and fun to listen to and fun to watch. So, you know, hey, we had a great show. What else could you say, right? A legendary
show.
Yeah,
talking baseball with friends. So we appreciate you listening. We'll bring you some more good guests and some more interesting hot topics. And stay tuned for Ray and Tay today. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on Friday.
Yeah, and Friday we'll be giving you our Final Four preview. And let's hope the Knicks win tonight, their 10th straight against the Hawks. Let's go Knicks. So thanks for listening. We're out.